should actually be doing that on every show, just making sure people remember what day of the week it is. Maybe this one's an easy one for you to remember, but it's Friday today. And again, Raptors rerun podcast coming your way after Raptors Bucks game 3 tonight on Sportsnet. It's a long one, the game is, so strap in for an in-depth podcast. But right now, very happy to be joined by former Toronto Maple Leaf, fan favorite, currently a member of the Colorado Avalanche, Nazem Kadri. Naz, thanks so much for doing this. Are you back in Canada? How is self-isolation treating you?
Not that great. It's pretty quiet, that's for sure. I'm still in Denver. Haven't had the chance to come home yet, so I'm just kind of waiting to see how things unfold and just try to make a decision after that.
You're getting good at trick shots though, huh? Is that's the way that that's your thing that you're doing with the downtime?
Honestly, I enjoy it because it just kills hours, and it's something that, I don't have to figure out to try to find something to do. So, they're working for me. They're pretty cool. It kills some time, and it's some pretty good content, so hopefully the fans like it.
Yeah, man, it is fun. It's crazy, like, the amount of trick shot stuff that's come out. Like, this is just, okay, you put people alone, you know what they're going to do? They're going to try to find ways to throw ping pong balls into containers. Like, they're going to spend hours throwing ping pong balls into containers. Like, this is what we are when we're caged up. Like, we're trick shot artists. Everybody wants to do that. You mentioned it, man. Everybody wants to kill time. Everyone wants to have a goal. Everyone wants to celebrate something. That's it.
Exactly, and that's, basically the reason why I did it. I just, needed to pass some time and felt like that was a good way. So I could just tried to have fun with it.
So we're all friends here. Hey, listen, it's just the three of us dudes talking. Be straight with us. Was that the first attempt, like you claimed on the Instagram post?
I don't know if I should get in my dirty laundry on here or not, but... No, it definitely was not. I was in my basement for hours trying that shot, and I finally nailed it. I was pretty proud of myself.
Yeah, I have a little hoop, one of those mini hoops with just the little mini basketball, and I've never had a better purchase in my entire life. Like, it's made – I think I paid maybe $20 for this thing, and it's the best $20 I've ever spent in my entire life. I'm just becoming the best – shooter from sitting on my couch at a mini basketball net that the world's ever seen. Like, I'm Larry Bird of that thing. There's no one that can beat me on this court. I guarantee you.
I might have to head to Amazon online and order one of those bad boys for sure.
Oh, dude, do it. It's so worth it. It is so unbelievably worth it. What about diet, though? Last time we talked to you, it was when you were still in Toronto, and you had talked about how your diet shifted big time and you had cut out cookies. And we had told you that we had a group chat called the Cookie Boys, which was just – it has died down a little bit lately, I won't lie. But maybe this is kind of the shot in the arm it needs, where we just shared the cookies that we were eating on, I don't know, whatever day we were eating cookies and what we were going with, cookie reviews. And how are you doing with cookies and diets? Because, man, yeah, this is – basically all I do is, shoot on that little mini basketball hoop and eat food. Like, that's what I'm doing.
I know it's tough. I mean, but for my line of work, I think it's you're always better off just trying to stay physically and mentally prepared. So it's been hard, but I've always been trying to find ways to still be active and just try not to coop myself up inside the house too much. So dieting's good, working out's good. I mean, do I wish I could do it with my teammates instead of by myself, sure. But, hopefully that gets resolved soon.
Yeah, and you went down with that lower body injury back in February. How's that feeling? How are you feeling physically?
I feel great. Back to pretty much 100%. I was on my way to come back probably in the couple games leading up to this whole, fiasco, this whole pandemic that we had. So I was, essentially ready to go. And then this, they dropped the bomb on us to postpone the season. So that was kind of unfortunate and tough timing, but, it is what it is.
So you haven't been able to see your teammates, which I'm guessing sucks. We haven't been able to see our teammates either, which has been good for me because the last time – so I don't know if you know this, but your former boss, Brian Burke, now works with us. He works at Sportsnet 590. He does the show right after ours. And the other day, last week before this all started, I rapped to him over the show. And, yeah, he wasn't a big fan. He wasn't a big fan of my rap.
Nobody was, to be fair.
Yeah, nobody was. But Berkey especially was not really too fired up about it. So I've been good not being able to see Burke. Him not seeing me has been a nice little break. But he's actually on with us later today. And I wonder how your interactions with Burke were, because he's your guy. Like, did you ever have a time where maybe you pissed off Brian Burke like I did?
Several times. several times.
All right, what's the one you can tell?
I'm sure he'd tell you the same thing, but, you know, Berkey was, you know, super transparent with me, and we just had a good relationship since I was drafted, and, you know, I appreciated the time he spent, you know, kind of working with a young kid that was, you know, kind of oblivious to everything at the time, and, you know, helped me turn me into you know, a hockey player. So, you know, I'm forever going to be thankful for that.
Yeah, he's actually been a real leader throughout all of this for everybody. Like, he's booking guests for Hockey Central. He's actually sending out emails to everyone, trying to give people pep talks. It's actually been kind of a trip. But, yeah, do you have one time that you could share? Do you have one time where you could share that you and Berkey, maybe he wasn't the happiest with you, that won't get you in trouble?
Oh yeah, I mean, he. I mean, yeah. There's definitely a few occasions, but, you know, one time I had parked in a, and this was when I was playing for the Marlies. The I was sent down, and you know, we had practice, and I showed up to the rink, and I was running a little bit behind, and I pulled up to the rink, and I parked in a parking spot that maybe I wasn't supposed to park in, and that wasn't deemed a parking spot. And I just went ahead and, you know, parked alongside the curb and didn't think anything of it, ran inside the rank and come outside. And I think Berkey calls me in and, you know, had a little discussion with me and just wasn't happy with where I parked and what time I got there. So he gave me a nice little earful and, you know, been best buddies ever since.
Yeah. That's the one good thing that we haven't had to deal with yet is, like, he's been annoyed with me. He gets annoyed with me all the time, but he hasn't chewed me out. So I'm doing my best to avoid that. Like, that's what I'm saying about the quarantine. That's the number one reason why it's been good is, like, I haven't had the chance to have Berkey just, lay into me yet. So it's good. I'm fine staying at home, nice and safe.
Yeah, you want to stay on Berkey's good side. Let's just put it that way for sure.
So this is big times for you in your Instagram and your trick shots. Also, big times for your cat's Instagram account at Jazzy Kadri, which has 14,300 followers. How on top of that are you? Last post was a day ago.
Yeah, I mean it's something that. You know, we're just trying to give the fans some content, and, you know, we know they're bored at home, and we're bored at home, so it's, you know, everyone's kind of hopping on the internet and helping each other out, just trying to entertain each other, which I can appreciate. So, you know, Jazzy's holding it down. She's always here, and, you know, we take a couple pictures and videos of her, you know, when she's up to no good.
I think if the cat passed you in Instagram followers, you'd shut that account down right quick. You'd be like, listen, the cat's not passing me.
Still like 90,000 away, though.
Yeah, so. I know. That's what I mean.
Ways to go.
The more, the merrier.
Yeah, as long as Jazzy knows where she or he stands in the pecking order, then it's all good. As long as it just maintains the order of the house. Like, that's what we're going to have.
Jazzy might be getting some side deals pretty soon. I don't know.
Yeah, dude, that honestly, you could be a pioneer. You could get your cat a sponsorship on Instagram and be like, listen, Purina, you want to make big dough? Like, I'll show my cat eating your food every single week, once a day. This is how we're going to get this thing done.
I've been over here keeping her alive, you know, it's the least she can do.
I have seen some videos, though, of cats, because dogs love it, right? Dogs love having their owners around all the time. But I think cats like to have the space. And a lot of them are like, hey, you got to leave. You got to get out of here for a little bit. Like, I like having my own time.
Nah, she's, you know, she's a playful little thing. So that's part of the reason why I got her years ago. Just, you know, she's pretty good companionship. So I'm gonna have her back on that one.
Yeah, talking to Nazem Kadri, you're keeping the cat alive. You also got a human being you're keeping alive now, too. You got a new baby. I mean, luckily for you, the baby doesn't really know what's going on here, but this must be some great family time for you as well.
Absolutely. I mean, if there's one positive you can, you can put it set aside, it's definitely spending some more time with your family. And, you know, I'm sure other, you know, athletes feel the same way. So, you know, our lifestyles, we're always on the go, and, you know, it's always just a routine, and there's somewhere to be in a different city. So it's nice to be home and kind of hold down the fort with the family, which is great.
Anything surprise you about the newborn experience? Like anything that you didn't think about that you were like, oh yeah, that's kind of a big deal. Something I didn't think it was going to be a big deal.
I don't really think so, man. To be honest with you, she's 9 months now, and she's, you know, one of the easiest babies to take care of. I feel she doesn't really give us much of a problem, which, you know, I'm very thankful and lucky for. And yeah, it's been smooth sailing. Her, you know, even you know, her delivery and everything was smooth, and it was great from day one. So I got absolutely nothing to complain about.
So you, I'm sure you have buddies that have not that experience. I am a dad who did not have that experience, where like my kid didn't sleep through the night until he was one, and he only slept through the night because we're like, well, we just gotta let him cry it out all night. Like, do you tell that to your other buddies who have newborns who are going through tough times? Because that is not normal. The great experience you had.
I know, and that's what I keep hearing. So I mean, I don't want to go around bragging to everybody and you know, making it seem you know, outrageous, but you know, I'm kind of respectful of other people's feelings and try to be considerate. But you know, from my end, you know, super lucky, grateful. She's just such a cute kid, and she's just a ton of fun to be around.
Yeah, if I was you, I wouldn't be that way. I'd rub it in people's faces. And yeah, even if it wasn't true, I would lie. I'd be like, you guys said having a baby is hard and raising a child is hard. I was like, it's so easy. Like, it's the easiest thing I've ever done. They're just laying there. You touch them. You hold them for a bit.
So some people make it offended. You never know. So it's just better to stay on the safe side, you know?
Yeah. Maybe. Not me.
No, you're a good guy, and JD is a bad guy.
People are sensitive these days.
Yeah, it's true. Oh, man. That's the one thing that I'm hoping changes a little bit from this, is that everything is so crappy right now and everyone is having to deal with an actual shared problem, that maybe we stop making up problems and not everyone is so sensitive to just every stupid little thing that happens. Like, that would be cool. That would be really, really cool if that's the byproduct of this.
I would like that.
And yeah, you went through it, right? Because a couple of your teammates tested positive. What was the process when it was like everybody having to get tested and everybody going on lockdown and the communication that you had with people? What were those 2 weeks like?
It was bizarre. It was just very weird, and you know, something I've obviously never been before. You know, I was, like we mentioned earlier, I was working, you know, working hard, coming back from an injury, just about ready to hop in the lineup, and then this, you know, bombshell was dropped on us, and all of a sudden we just couldn't even go to the rink anymore. You know, so it was something pretty drastic. It's not like, you know, they took away, you know, the games and then, you know, slowly the practices. And it's not like it was a domino effect. It was just everything shut down immediately, right away. So, you know, that was a little weird and tough to adjust to. But like I said, you gotta live on the fly and find ways to adapt.
Yeah, we don't need to know who those guys are, but are they doing okay? Do you know how they're doing?
Yeah, I do. You know, I'm fairly certain they're, you know, 100% recovered, had some early symptoms, and, you know, quarantined and isolated right away. So it was, you know, kudos to them for, for taking it serious and, you know, and taking care of the problem right away.
That's good, man. Last one from me anyways. I don't know what else Benny has, but we've heard from a few guys that have basically said there's no way that you can just step on the ice and play playoff games. That if the NHL does come back, there's got to be some type of ramping up process where guys can get their legs back more than just, you know, being at a practice facility. And so this is a bit of a two-parter, but one is, do you agree with that? Do you think that there would need to be some type of regular season game or some type of exhibition game before they hit playoffs? And two is, how agreeable do you think guys would be to playing in neutral sites where a bunch of guys end up flying in for these playoff games and essentially play out the entirety of the playoffs in a couple of different arenas?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've heard both perspectives, and I mean, for me, you know, I think it's I think it's just tough. It depends what kind of team, you know, you are. And I know for us, you know, it would suck having to hop right into playoffs because we're also chasing something for the regular season. You know, I think second in the Central, game in hand, 2 points back from the Blues, which, you know, we're competing for, you know, for first place and home ice advantage through the playoffs, which, you know, is a big time advantage. So for us, I think, you know, we'd like to come back and you know, have a few test runs and a few games before the playoffs just to get tuned up a little bit and then hop right in. But, you know, I think the quarantine site could definitely be an option just because it's under control and, you know, there's less likely of a chance for things to go bad. And, you know, fans can still watch high-level hockey and someone walk away with the Stanley Cup, which is ultimately what we want. And, you know, there's teams and guys chasing that trophy down, and we know, you know, we want to compete for it.
Naz, thanks so much for doing this. Congrats on the new baby and winning the lottery because she sleeps all the time. Well done. Thanks for this.
Thanks.
All right. Yeah. My kids did not sleep through the night. This is never a problem you're going to have, JD, but yeah, it's I remember when my kids were babies and hearing the stories of people's kids who did sleep through the night being very furious. Made me mad. I can't hear you. Are you trying to speak to me?
I don't have the problem. Headphone.
There you go.
I don't have the problem of children keeping me up at night, but I would gather it's pretty damn close to how annoying it is to hear you talk about it as much as you do.
Wrong.
No, I do. I think that I actually get sleep deprived listening to you prattle on about, oh, you have a baby who goes to sleep? I don't have a baby who goes to sleep. Babies don't really go to sleep sometimes. Babies really keep you up sometimes.
You were close to the joke. It's the opposite. You should have made the opposite joke that you're not sleep deprived when I talk about it because it puts you to sleep. That was the joke. That was the more
I stay up at night. I stay up at night horrified, and I remember all how boring your stories are, and they haunt me. They're like little spooky ghosts in my room, just floating around, little tremors. Ugh, I hate it.
So how are you sleeping?
Haunt me no more, spirits. I'm sleeping horribly. I got to say, it's the number one thing that I can't get down. I can't get the sleeping down. I'm like up until 3 o'clock in the morning. Like it's just bad. And then I'm waking up early and because I'm always afraid that I'm going to sleep in and that's my body clock is like, yeah, no, I know. I'm afraid of missing the show. And
well,
so
an
I
alarm,
wake up
then.
Way too early. I do set an alarm. Of course I do. I'm just saying that it's the I get a weird – I'm a bad sleeper in general, man. I'm just not a good sleeper, period. If there's anything I'm actually jealous of, it's the people who say like when they want to go to sleep, they just fall asleep. That those people actually exist. They turn the lights off. They go in a dark room. The savvy of the world, where it's just they put their head on a pillow and they just go out. Like it's that easy to them. They don't understand what it's like to be a person like me who it takes hours for me to wind down.
Hey, this is not. I'm not talking about savvy. Savvy's different case altogether. But I would say.
I mean, he's the creme de la creme when it comes to falling asleep.
Yeah, but what I'm about to say doesn't necessarily apply to Mark Savard. But I would say the people that can do that, it's probably because they put their big empty heads on the pillow. And they're like, oh, yeah, Nothing's coming out of that bad boy. Yeah. Machine, the machine is barely running up there when they go to sleep, so it's like just one button to turn it off, right? Like you and I, and you got like a couple of switches, like you're like, you have to do the whole shutdown checklist and like, you got to turn the, you got to spin the thing and then a couple of switches, and you have to do them in the right order too, or else, the machine's still kind of on and it's using power and, yeah, it messes with everything. The people that don't have the machine running, it's like it's barely on to begin with. Just one big master switch, you know, one of those like they have in Ghostbusters when they turn off the thing that's keeping all the ghosts in there. It's just one big thing. Turn it right off. 12 hours later, it turns back on.
That analogy went on too long. I liked what Naz said about the neutral site because I really do believe that's our best chance forward. And it's our best chance to get sports back, and I want sports to come back. I don't care. I don't care if that sounds like priorities aren't in order, because obviously everything comes with the caveat of, yeah, I want people to be safe. I want people to be comfortable. But I think sports coming back is going to be important, and I really want them to be back, period. I think it's going to be a great distraction for people, a great comfort for people to have that back in their lives. And I think it's also great just to have the game. So I'm not really apologetic for that. And if the guys have to be slightly inconvenienced, I think most of them are going to be like Kadri, where they look at it and say, we don't want to go a year without awarding the Stanley Cup. So yeah, do we have to live in a hotel room potentially for 2 months, which would be super annoying? For sure. But we're already cooped up in our homes. We've basically been training for something like this. If they're not skating, they're not practicing, they're not training for actually playing hockey, they are definitely training for being in a small, small hotel room for a lengthy period of time.
Okay, maybe this question is too big to answer in the time that we have, but I want sports back as well. But even the quarantine thing, I think, has its issues, and obviously you understand some of the issues too, but would you be okay with sports returning with not everybody? Like, maybe some people are still recovering from COVID. Maybe people get COVID like a week before this whole thing is supposed to start, and they have to quarantine themselves, and they're not quite ready to get back to action, or they can't travel, or they don't want to travel. Are you okay with a league, say the NBA, restarting, and like, obviously it's not going to be 50% of the league, but like even like a dozen guys are like, you know what, I know what you're doing and I'd love to be a part of it, I just can't. Like, is that acceptable? Is it fair? Like, there's some questions that are, I think, associated with the return to action in a quarantine scenario.
Yeah, of course it's fair, but then you're not going to get paid. Like,
yeah,
I just, like, that's the only thing is,
what about
of
people who's it's not by choice, right? Like, what if these travel bans are still in place? And I imagine it won't be a problem if you're in North America, you're Canada, and like everybody's going to Vegas. Like, I'm sure the Raptors would be.
I mean, that's obvious though. What do you mean? If they can't get there, they can't get there. Like, it is what it is. Of course, I'm comfortable with them bringing back sports in that scenario. Like, I have no problem with that. So who's gone? Like, who's in a home country where they're not going to be able to come back? My understanding is most guys have stayed in the cities they play in, especially for the NBA and the NHL.
You don't think there's a single player in the NHL that's no longer in North America?
Of course, there's probably a few players. I'm saying, too bad. That's the risk you took when you left. Like, period. Of course. That's not even insensitive, man. It sounds like that, but what are they going to do? They're going to put the whole league on hold because one guy can't get out of Russia and he made the decision to go home? Like, no. That's what happens. Like, that's the reality you're living with. Like, I don't know why that's something that would be hard to understand. Of course, the league is not going to stop for one player.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not talking about a scenario where it's one player, but what if, like, we're talking about, hey, man, Leafs are missing a couple of guys, like, maybe their most important guys. Say, you know, two of their defensemen were in Europe, and all right, league's back underway, and we're going to a playoff scenario, and you're
so
already
you
like short on the blue line.
So you
and now you have 2/6 of your starting defensemen out of the line.
I don't even know what you're driving at here. Like, yeah, it's obviously not ideal, but none of this is. So you just have to overcome things that are problems, and that's one of them. You don't have guys, you play without the guys that can't come, period. Guys don't want to play, you can't force them to play. They play without them. You're going to be able to find enough bodies to do this thing unless it's, you know, an overwhelming number of players who just simply say, this isn't safe, we don't want to do it, we're not into it.
Yeah. I think the same thing has to be thought about, like, the idea of somebody contracting COVID, like, when this league happens again, like, that you don't shut it down immediately, that you just remove that person from the equation.
Yep, anyways, for sure.
There's lots of things that need to be thought about when it comes to whether this is even going to happen, the quarantine thing. Let's take a break. And when we come back, we'll do more of Good Show. Ben Ennis, J.D. Bunkus, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. All right, everybody sit up straight. All right, look alive here. Time to talk to captain of Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and Sportsnet, our fearless leader, Brian Burke, is on Good Show right now. How's it going, Brian?
Good, guys. How are you?
Doing all right. Yeah. We're hanging in. Really enjoyed your Ask Berkey on Twitter yesterday. That must have been a lot of fun for you. What was the process for you, though? Were you culling through all those tweets? How was that working out?
No, actually, my three older kids did all the work. I just sat at my kitchen table here and answered questions. So Katie, Patrick, and Molly. Katie and Molly live in Boston, and Patrick lives in Manhattan. They did all the technical support. So,
all right. So they didn't tell you about the tweets that weren't necessarily complimentary, right? Like they were protecting you, because God knows you need protecting. You couldn't handle that.
Oh, no, they read me a couple of nasty ones that came from idiots that have nothing better to do. I know there's a whole universe of people that can't stand me, and they actually read me some of those, too.
Yeah, it used to be that back in the day, you would have kids so that they could work the farm for you, you know? Like, you'd have lots of kids, they'd plow the fields, you know, they'd help make you some food, they'd clean the shanty, whatever. You, now, it's like it's 2020, we live in a reality where you have kids so they can read your tweets and send them to you, is what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly. It's a little different today.
Yeah. Yeah, I like it.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, obviously the one that made news is you talking about Roberto Luongo, and how they asked for Gardner, Kadri, and two firsts, and what, there was just never any negotiation after that? Like, what happens when they put an offer like that on the table that's obviously the asking price is way, way too high? They just never wanted to budge?
Well, it was Mike Gillis was the GM of the Canucks at the time, and he told me the night before the first round of the draft was on Friday night. And he asked me to go underneath the stands with him, which is what you do when you're talking about a serious trade and you don't want to be caught on camera. So we walk under the vomitorium and down by where the washrooms are. And he said, you're off the list. Roberto will not accept a trade to the Toronto Maple Leafs tonight. I said, okay. I'm not going to jump off a cliff. If that's the case, that's fine. And we're going on Saturday morning. Now we're doing rounds 2 through 7 or whatever it is. And, he says, well, you're back on the list. I said, well, I feel really special today that I'm back on the list. And I said, I'm really grateful for that. And he said, I'll do it for Gardner, Kadri, and two firsts. And I started yelling at him and cursing at him. Like, I said, you're out of your GD mind, and calling names. And he said, keep your voice down. I said, I'm not keeping my voice down. So I walked right to Florida's table, because it was us in Florida. And I walked right to their table. I said, we're out. Just so you know, don't negotiate against us. We are out. We are not doing this deal. We're not in on Luongo. That was the end of it.
Wow. That feels pretty contentious.
Well, I'm not a big fan of Mike Gillis's. We get along personally, and we're civil and stuff, but I didn't have much luck with him. He represented Pavel Bure when he held out, too, in my first year in Vancouver, so that didn't work out very well.
Did you ever have a time where you felt like another GM who didn't like you undercut you on a deal and hurt you on one? Like, I would imagine that's how Gillis felt in that moment, where he's looking at you going over to Florida's table and saying that and thinking, oh, man, you just – like, I would assume that generally there's some kind of a code there between general managers that you wouldn't do that, and that it would take extraordinary circumstances. Do you ever remember another general manager who did something like that to you?
No, the guys get along pretty well. It's just, it's, that one really just set me off. As a, you know, you're pretty high strung at the draft anyway, right? You're on your A game. You got your adrenaline going, and at this one, when he gave me the asking price, I just snapped on him. So I don't remember something like that happening to me or me doing that to someone else.
So do you think he was bluffing when he said that Luongo didn't want to come to Toronto the entire time, or do you think he actually went back to Luongo and said, hey, listen, if we can get this, would there be something that could work out with you going to Toronto? What do you think was actually happening when he said that Roberto didn't want to come to Toronto?
No, I've had my disagreements with Mike, but I don't doubt his veracity, his honesty. I think Roberto was hoping to get to Florida. And so he said, don't do anything with Toronto that night. And the next day, when that didn't happen, he's like, well, I got to get out of here somehow. So, yeah, I'll go to Toronto. And so I think it was an honest answer. Just I didn't like the price.
Yeah, it's obviously an extremely, extremely high price. And this is aside from that. But does it make it harder to trade guys when you have maybe a little bit more invested in them, when you're watching them grow? Because, yeah, Kadri is a draft pick of yours. Gardner, same thing. You went out and you acquired him in what was ended up being a steal of a deal. But does it make it more difficult sometimes? How does it work when you have to try and separate yourself from blossoming young players that you've scouted and you've developed, and moving them for pieces that you want now?
Well, I think you need a real callus on your heart when you're a GM. You need to separate those feelings, because you do fall in love with players. You do draft players and watch them develop, and you really get close to them. And you need to have some distance between them. They need to know you're their friend, but you're still their boss. And I think there's a cold-hearted, cold-blooded approach that you need to have. You need to have a baseline that most people don't have. If you trade a guy, if his wife's expecting a baby in a month and you trade him, or one of his parents is sick and you trade him. And there has to be a cold-blooded part of it that's not, you know, really most people aren't comfortable with that.
Well, obviously you really like Nazem Kadri. We had him on before you today, and we asked him if he ever frustrated you. And he laughed a lot. He laughed a lot at that question. And then we asked him for a time that he could share that would not get him in trouble publicly. And he doesn't think you're a big fan of his parking. Do you know what we mean?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. He parked in the fire lane at the... So the Marlies, if you go out to the... What is it now? The Ford Center?
You see
MasterCard.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah, it is. Now it's Ford. Now it's Ford. It was the MasterCard Center. Now it's Ford.
So,
yeah.
And we respect and admire our sponsors. So, okay, the Ford Center. So the way it's set up, and it was done before I got here, so I don't take any credit for this, but the Marlies complex at the Ford Center is completely distinct from the Leafs complex. The parking is distinct. The practice rink is distinct. The dressing rooms are distinct. So you're a Marley until you're a Leaf. The players don't ever interact. They don't ever walk by each other. They kept them completely separate, which is really smart. That was done before I got here, like I say. So one day, Dave Poulin's going to practice, and he walks in the door, and there's someone parked in the fire lane right in front of the door. He goes to the trainer. He says, whose car is that? And he said, it's Naz's car. So Dave Poulin goes over to Naz and says, get out there and move your car. Naz is in his underwear. He's getting dressed. He says, park. He says, you have to park in the farthest spot from the door. So they have their own parking lot, but the farthest spot from the door is like 100 feet from the door, 150 feet. And then you park there for a month. So, like, you know, it's cold in Toronto, right? He had to park in the farthest stall for a month and then walk. And later that day, he was out with the guys and he parked in a handicapped spot and he got a ticket for $460 or $490. So, yeah, we're not a big fan of Nas parking. I will tell you this, and Dallas Eakins will tell you this too, is Nas was frustrating for us because he was very independent and very stubborn. But we never lost faith in he was such an intense player. He dragged the entire team into the fight every night. We just knew we had to be patient with him. And he's turned out to be a really good NHL player. I'm not surprised.
Do you remember a specific moment where you had thought he's turned a corner?
just watching him play. Even so, he turned pro at 19. So ordinarily, you can't send a junior drafted player to the American League at 19. They have to go back to junior. But he played 4 years in the OHL, so he could go into the American League as a 19-year-old, where most kids can't. So we turned him pro early. We made him billet. His first year, we made him live with a family. He lived with a Toronto police officer. And just the parking and he didn't have good friends. The people he ran with were the wrong people. But there's this evolution that even when we were frustrated with him, he still played the way we wanted to play. Like, this is a guy who we needed that element on our team. And so it wasn't any crystal moment where I said, okay, finally he gets it. It was more an evolution.
Yeah, and obviously he's come around, and personally it seems like, you know, with the wife and the new baby, he seems like a different guy right now. Do you think he could have his career turns out the same way? Because you talk about the on-ice thing still being good, even with the bad friends and the stuff off the ice. Do you think his career ends up as well as it has if he continues down that path, or did he have to kind of develop what he's developed personally to get to where he is?
No, I don't think he would have played if he hadn't made some changes in his life. And that's, you know, I take some credit for that. More, not that I take credit for that. Let me rephrase that. Dallas Eakins deserves a lot of credit for that, for being patient with the kid, but being stern and hard on the kid too. So some of that change was natural evolution, and some of it was force fed right down his throat. So some tough love there, some, you know, we had to beat on this kid a little bit, but he was, he's such a good kid, and his family gave him the right values that he figured it out. And I think the Leafs miss him. I really think he's an important part of the Colorado team, and I think he's missed here.
Oh, definitely. If you look at the way that they played in some of these games and throughout the season, I think that the number one thing a lot of fans pointed to was that you weren't going to get performances like this. You weren't going to have lackluster energy performances like this if you did have Nazem Kadri, and that you pulled, yeah, part of the team's heartbeat out, that he was an agitator. He was someone who played consistently. He was a hard guy to play against just about every single night. He relished those matchup roles, especially in the early years under this new management group or this coaching staff. And yeah, they absolutely missed him this year. It was just, yeah, they looked at it and thought that they had to balance the roster. But would you have done, when you looked at it that way, would you have thought the same thing, that after two suspensions in the playoffs, there's just no way that you can go back to the well because of the risk that you take on yourself by running it back one more time?
Well, I understand why Kyle traded him. Like, you lose trust in a guy who gets suspended twice in a row in the playoffs, and you lose faith in his ability to play within the rules. The thing that bothered me was we were watching the game. I remember talking to Nicky about this. Is you could see he was going to snap. Mm-hmm. And someone at that point on the coaching staff or a teammate had to grab him and say, hey, you need to finish this game and finish this series. Like, get off that right now you're on a dangerous level mentally. You got to get off that cliff. Mm-hmm. And I think that he could have been contained and restrained during that game if people have been paying more attention. But I understand why Kyle did it. Like, you have to trust your teammates at crunch time. You're in a serious playoff game and guy gets suspended 2 years in a row or whatever. I get that. And I actually think the players that came back in the deal was a fair deal. Like, I'm not criticizing the deal. I think that he provides an element that they need and miss. I think Clifford brings that element back a little bit, but I think they miss him.
Well, the other thing, though, too, is that Kadri seemed to really relish playing here, and it didn't, like, maybe you could argue the spotlight affected him a bit with the cockiness early and how right out of the gate he's being compared to Doug Gilmore by a newspaper, and he's getting the, you know, the kiss from Grapes, and you're saying, okay, there's a lot of hype, so maybe that is a bit of a detraction. But overall, I think there's a real truth in whether or not you can play in a big market and in a fishbowl, and it's pretty clear that he didn't shy away from that. And the one thing about that trade is, yes, on paper, it was a totally fine trade in the moment. You mentioned that there are definitely reasons to have made that trade. I think that, just, again, this is just my opinion, but part of the reason why it hasn't worked out is that one of the guys that came back in the deal for you might not work in the market as well as maybe he thought he would, or maybe the general manager thought he would. And how much of a focus was that for you when you were looking at players? And how did you try to evaluate that when it came to their personalities, or whether or not they would be able to handle the extra media scrutiny, the added attention? Was it mostly just, hey, this is a good player, and if it fails, it fails? Or did you have some type of a process to try and work that out?
No, you have to focus on that if you're in Toronto or Montreal. Any Canadian market, but the two big ones are Toronto and Montreal. We talked about it at length. Can this player play here? Can this player handle the fishbowl, the spotlight, whatever analogy you want to use? Can they handle playing in Toronto? The best example I think fans will remember from the last 10 years is Francois Beauchemin. Mm-hmm. Beauch was great for me in Anaheim. We get him here, he could not handle the spotlight. And he said he wasn't reading social media, he said he wasn't paying attention, but he could not handle it. And he went back and went back to being a really good player. Just couldn't handle it here. And so I think what you're saying is about Barry is the same thing. Tyson Barry has trouble with the spotlight here. I'm not sure if it's not a system issue, like the way they played. He got off to a poor start, but there's no question that we talked about that. It's like you go to a small theater. Like, I grew up in Minneapolis, so we had the Guthrie Theater. That was our big repertory theater, and you go see a play at the Guthrie. But that same actor, there's a lot of guys who can do the Guthrie in places like Topeka and Peoria and Minneapolis, but they can't do Broadway because the lights are too bright. And so that's the test we'd say to guys: can this player play here? And we thought we had a good handle on who could do it. Like Francois Beauchemin, he didn't pay any attention to the media. We thought he won't mind it here, but he couldn't play here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That's incredible insight. Brian, when will you be out of headline-making stories to tell us, specifically about the Toronto Maple Leafs? Are you holding some back? Are you just waiting for the right question? Or is that it? Was the Luongo story the last one?
Well, if I'm waiting for the right question on this show, I got plenty of stories.
Yeah.
How about this one? Do you have a headline-making story you'd like to tell us?
No. I buy my book when it comes out in October.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about the book? Because I saw you were answering questions about when it's coming out. It's coming out in September. Like, what should we expect out of that book?
I think people will enjoy it. It's pretty frank. There's a lot of stories in there that people haven't heard, and a lot of detail. And I think people will enjoy it. I think it's going to be good.
Well, we can't wait to read it. Hopefully we don't have nearly as much time to read it. We'll find time in September, but yeah, we can't wait
to read it. I hope so, too.
Thanks, Brian.
Thanks,
guys.
There's Brian Burke, our fearless leader, making headlines. Like, not only is he leading us through email and motivational responses to things, mm-hmm. but he's also like giving us content by, giving us little nuggets, like the fact that that Leafs team that went to a Game 7 blew a 4-1 lead in the third period, partly because James Reimer wasn't an elite-level goaltender in that third period, was trying to upgrade its goaltending before he was fired in January of that season with a guy that's going to the Hall of Fame in Roberto Luongo.
That one concussion really just changed everything for Reimer's career. But, you do go back and I've already done a rewatch of that Game 7 fairly recently.
Oh, my goodness.
The Leafs,
you have?
Yeah, the Leafs are not good in that third period. In fact, it's just they can't get the puck out of their own zone in some places, and the Bruins are just doing their classic Bruins thing. And this is when the Bruins also had Lucic, and it was good Lucic, not the Lucic everybody mocks, where he's just dominating the entire game. They have Chara in his prime. They're just beating the Leafs. They're just beating them in, and it's hard to put blame on one guy. And I'm definitely not doing this, but when you rewatch that game, Reimer's rebound control is egregious in that third period. It's just he can't collect a puck, he can't stop a puck, and just hold it. It doesn't work for him. And if you're looking at primary reasons as to why they blew that game, I still do think it's him. He played a good series, he had some good moments, he stole them some games, but that Game 7, if you're looking at a primary offender, it's absolutely still James Reimer in that moment. And I could totally see how when you wanted to change or keep your core, and remember, Burke said the same thing, right, where he felt like once they had gotten to that point, that half season, that was where they really thought they were going to take off. That was the group that he thought, hey, let me see these guys play out. We're fast, we're strong. This was what it was all for. And so, yeah, you can see why an aggressive move would want to be made like that.
Yeah, and even if you're not necessarily talking about the actual goaltending, like allowing goals, like the way that team played in front of a guy that they didn't have a ton of confidence in the final 10 minutes of that third period was pretty evident. Let's talk to a big dog like ourselves, big media dog, Rich Eisen. Next, it is a good show. Ben Ennis, JD Bunkus, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.